Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. As usual, we start with the good, and it's a follow-up to yesterday's good martini, and that's that Hillary's private email server is now in the custody of the Justice Department. And obviously, that has not been a good situation for Mrs. Clinton. This whole story has led to her plummeting numbers, especially on the issues of integrity and trustworthiness and that sort of thing. And yesterday, the campaign tried to stress the point that Hillary Clinton is not under investigation, just the situation around her email server. Ron Fornia of National Journal, formerly the Associated Press, who covered the Clintons in Arkansas, in addition to Washington, D.C., says this is not a good defense on the part of the Clintons.
Yesterday, we had Hillary Clinton's chief spokesperson, Jennifer Palmieri, actually argue that the central core of her argument in this long spin document she put out is that technically Hillary Clinton is not a target of the investigation. When you're arguing that technically your candidate is not the target of an investigation, you're losing.
That was on Inside Politics with John King on CNN. So, Jim, good point by Fournier, who's a fairly straight shooter on these issues. In fact, he's probably somewhat sympathetic towards the Clintons in a lot of ways. To point out the obvious here, that if that's your defense from the Clinton campaign, it's not been a good week or a good month or even a good campaign for you.
You want to talk about the power of spin. There was some reporter, I want to say it was Gannett or one of those other wire services, was on cable the other day, I believe yesterday, and she said, well, look, it's not that Hillary Clinton is under investigation. It's her behavior that's under investigation. And you think I'm making it up? It's not. And I was thinking about, we use the term spin, the idea of kind of subtly or perhaps not so subtly altering the facts or the emphasis in order to change the response people have to it. And I try to keep my sci-fi references to a minimum on this podcast, Greg, but in X-Men First Class, there was a guy who could create tornadoes with his hands, create little whirlwinds. That's really spinning somebody around to the point where they're honestly going on cable television saying, look, it's not Hillary who's under, it's the behavior. What? Well, no kidding. You know what I can genuinely say to that, Greg? At this point, what difference does it make if it's her or her behavior that is under investigation? Yeah. Bad news for Hillary on a couple of different fronts, which is good news for those of us who don't want to see her being elected president. The investigation is expanding to Huma Abedin, her longtime right-hand woman. And they've already apparently openly stated, the investigators, that yes, Huma Abedin was doing government work in a private email. We now know, like, all the instances, no, everything was done appropriately, and it was only yoga routines and things like that on the private emails. Now we know that, you know, government work was being done on private email, which is a no-no. Two, the FBI investigation, which is real. Three, the statement from the State Department Inspector General saying, yeah, there was classified information. Now the question is, did any of that classified information get passed on to Huma, which would be another major headache and could end up with Huma ending up in serious legal trouble. So, you add it all up, it's a very challenging moment, and the spin coming out of the Hillary team, you know, it may work on certain reporters, but I just don't see it working. And, you know, no, this FBI investigation is nothing to worry about. It's just a message that doesn't really work very well.
Interesting to watch the media yesterday, because on the one hand, you had even folks on MSNBC saying, this explanation from the Clintons is ridiculous, and her conduct during this whole episode is inexplicable and largely indefensible. And then other times you saw headlines on Twitter and elsewhere from different news sites saying, Republicans pounce on Clinton email story, as if that's the story, rather than the fact that the Secretary of State was more than likely breaking the law.
Greg, allegedly, okay, so now they're saying Hillary was had all kinds of classified information after she insisted she didn't under penalty of perjury. But aren't Republicans in danger of overreaching here? God, if I had a dime for every time we saw that asked by an anchor. You know, Joe Biden went on a chainsaw massacre yesterday, and Republicans are really up in arms about it. Aren't they overreaching a bit? Haven't we all gone on chainsaw massacres?
Yeah. All right, on to the bad martini now. And when it comes to the world of financing political campaigns, there are some names, thanks to the media, that are much better known than others. Everybody knows about the Koch brothers on the right. When it comes to the left, George Soros is out there. One that's equally as active, but perhaps not as well known as others, is a guy named Tom Steyer, and his big issue is environment, and he poured millions upon millions upon millions of dollars into campaigns of Democrats, particularly on the Senate campaigns last year. So he had a really fun year when it came to his political investments. But now he's out in California scratching his head. This is courtesy of Jazz Shaw over at Hot Air. Billionaire liberal activist Tom Steyer wants to be the next governor of California, at least according to West Coast insiders. If you're going to be the governor, you're going to have to investigate all sorts of things and solve the problems facing the state. One of these issues is the high cost of gasoline, some of the priciest in the nation. That's got consumers seeing red, and Steyer plans to get to the bottom of it, according to the Los Angeles Times. He recently called on the state Senate to subpoena industry executives to explain why prices surged in California this spring. In Anaheim on Friday, Steyer and Jamie Court, president of the advocacy group Consumer Watchdog, released a memo on public opinion about two potential ballot measures. One measure would impose a 10% oil extraction tax and dedicate the revenue to making higher education affordable for California residents. The other would strengthen disclosure requirements for oil companies' management of gasoline supplies and prices. And the story goes on to say, it's really, really is confusing why California's gas prices is so high when it's the taxes are, have a 52-cent gallon differential between California and the rest of the nation. Higher taxes, 17%. Higher production costs, 10 cents. Cap and trade fees, 10 cents. And an isolated market tax, I guess, of 10 cents. Largely because of environmental activists trying to get rid of fossil fuels.
You know, Greg, I'm reminded of a classic PSA from our childhood years or teen years. I learned it from watching you, all right? In the sense that, you know, why are California gas prices so high? You, Tom Steyer, that's why. You and people like you who keep, one, raising gas taxes, two, adding all kinds of requirements to put different additives and things like that that are allegedly for the good news of the environment, make it more expensive. Three, oppose fracking and development of more sources. And four, this is kind of really important one, is, you know, developing more refineries to take it from oil that comes out of the ground to get, like, does Tom Steyer know where gas comes from? Does he know anything about this process? You know, when you keep implementing new things that make it more expensive at each step of the way, it's going to get more expensive. This is kind of like the populism of the left bites itself in the end, because I don't, how does he research this without ever coming to a conclusion? Oh, all those regulations and gas taxes that I, and stuff like that that I pushed, they have nothing to do with this. He'll probably find a way because it's California. We saw True Detective, you know. It's Chinatown, Jake. What are you going to do about it? Actually, if anything, maybe this is the, maybe this should be our good martini, because it gives people in California a reason to look at all this and say, oh, wait, that's why our gas is so expensive.
Yeah, we're seeing this on a lot of issues where the Democrats are kind of running themselves in circles. We see it on the political correctness front. We saw it at the Bernie Sanders rally out there in Seattle. Some of these different extreme notions are starting to conflict with each other, and it's quite entertaining. All right, on to the crazy martini now. And Roger Stone gave, I believe, his first interview following his departure from the Trump campaign to you, Jim. He's also given a couple others, and now he's all the way down the list to Jesse Ventura, who hosts, I guess, a podcast, a video podcast called Off the Grid. And they talked about Stone's departure. They talked about Trump. And then Jesse Ventura decided that he wanted to see who Roger Stone thought would be a great running mate should Donald Trump actually win the Republican nomination. Surprising to some, Stone suggested that of the existing candidates, Ben Carson might be the best just because he doesn't have a political background and people just don't want politicians anymore, which led Jesse Ventura to say this after Stone said he shouldn't pick a governor or a former governor or anything like that.
He doesn't need some governor or some former governor or some senator. He needs somebody who comes from another world. The world of business, the world of medicine.
Roger, that throws me out of the equation because I'm a former governor. What do you think Donald would ever think of asking me?
I think that people view you as an outsider. But, Jesse, you'd have to become a registered Republican under the rules of the convention. And I don't think I could ever get you to do that.
Well, you know, it would depend if it was Donald, because he don't look like a registered Republican to me either.
Jim, even the most loyal Trump supporters have to be cringing and shaking their head on that one.
First of all, I should point out that Roger Stone did a whole bunch of interviews that day. So it's nice of you to suggest that maybe I had it first. I'm fairly certain he did a few others that day. But more importantly, when Trump goes on the Hugh Hewitt show, I don't see Hugh campaigning for the job of vice president. Right? That's got to be a weird experience to go on a show and the host is like, so, want to make me your running mate? And they're obviously Jesse's, you know, at least maybe his tongue is in cheek, but I think there's a possibility he really thinks he would do it. At this point, you know, listeners know my views on Donald Trump. Hey, go for it. Why go halfway, right? Why water down what makes the Donald special with some other regular running mate? Let's go with Jesse Ventura. But here's the next thing, and I'm going to do a, you know, Trump fans, you know, turn up the volume, you know, hit record. I'm going to do something and defend Trump, which is not something I do very often. Donald Trump is a registered Republican, and he's been one for about 4 years. He did change to the Democrats. He was an independent. He was, you know, looking seriously at the Reform Party back then. There have been a lot of times in the past he's not been a Republican, but he is a registered Republican, has been one for a couple of years. So when Jesse Ventura says, well, he doesn't look like a registered Republican to me, well, you just check his voter card, right? I mean, that's, you know, this isn't something you can really look. It's really more of a paperwork thing, Governor. So if Jesse Ventura does want to be Trump's running mate, he'd better change his voter registration pretty quickly.
The thing I'm thinking is, you know, you got to look at the electoral map. And if you're a Republican nominee thinking, wow, how could I lose Texas? I know. I'll take Jesse Ventura, the guy who sued the widow of Chris Kyle for defamation. That's the ticket.
Ah, he fights. He fights widows. Yeah. Yeah, there you go. It's hard to get any better.
Yeah. In Trump's defense, that was Ventura's idea, not Trump's. And I'm pretty sure that the Donald actually gets that far, it won't be Ventura.
I'll defend Trump again. I don't think he would go on. I don't think he'd be on board with that.
I would agree. All right, Jim, on that bizarre note, we'll pick it up again tomorrow.
Looking forward to it, Greg. See you tomorrow.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today, and tune in again on Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.